Welcome to Speak, a historical Monday show after a historical weekend in sports. Kevin Durant swept for the second time in 3 years. What does this mean for his legacy family? Could he afford to take another hit like this? But avoiding being swept, how about LeBron James and the Los Angeles Lakers? But the question is now this, as they play game five tonight, can LeBron make a historical comeback? And lastly, speaking of history, the Chicago Bears are hoping to make it with Caleb Williams at the helm. They've never had a 4,000-yard passer, but after a fantastic NFL draft over the course of the weekend, Caleb Williams says he's not ducking. They got everything they need. Bringing it to the desk, can we? An incredible, incredible, incredible weekend. Dave Hellman, NFL insider, knowledgeable about all things. Dave, you got your podcast. You got your hands full with the draft. Do you get to exhale now?
Maybe next week. We got to do the grades.
We got to do the grades.
The drafts and everything. Well, we'll get there.
We will get there. Joy Taylor, how are we doing?
Doing great.
I did not get the suit, so it's a suit day.
It is a suit day, so you know what that means. Trouble for you.
Eagles all-time rushing leader, my dog, LeSean Shady McCoy. Whenever he's wearing his glasses, you know it's about to be a fire show. Let's get straight to the draft, because it's an incredible weekend, but there is no bigger storyline in my mind than the draft. Relax into your chairs, turn up the volume, because we have to talk about the winners of the draft and where does your team fare. For me, the Philadelphia Eagles are by far the biggest winner in this year's NFL draft because they found three immediate starters, particularly on defense, and not just immediate starters, but also rotational starters. I think about in the secondary. The Eagles desperately needed another cornerback opposite Darius Slay. I do not know the future of James Bradbury, but I don't believe that it will be bright in Philadelphia. So then you go get Quinyon Mitchell in the first round. Then one of the top defensive back prospects was Cooper DeJean out of Iowa. I believe that he will likely start at safety opposite Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. But if you want to play him also at cornerback, you have him there. Then what you do, you say, you know what, we got rid of Hassan Reddick, so we need another pass rusher. Okay, you go out there and you get Hunt, a pass rusher in the third round, because yes, you have Huff, and yes, you have Josh Sweat, but those two individuals only have one 10-sack season in each of their careers. So now you go get Jalix Hunt in the third round, but then I love the fact that they added a little bit of substance at the running back room, because I know that Saquon Barkley is there. But y'all know Saquon Barkley be getting injured. So then you go and you get a running back out of Clemson who is a three-year starter. And then lastly, just to add a little cherry on top, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. Any Eagles fans know about Jeremiah Trotter Sr., but then you know the linebacker position is a position that needs help, and they supplement that position later on in the draft. What Howie Roseman did was once again marvelous. It was once again miraculous. The Eagles found instant impact players. They filled most of all of their positions of need, and they filled those positions of need early on in the draft. So I believe Philadelphia Eagles were the biggest winner of the draft. But, Joy, there were several winners. So what say you? Who was your biggest winner?
My Eagles fly. I'm going with the Bears. There were a lot of teams
Bears.
That did a great job in the draft, a nice job in the draft. But you were able to get a predicted-to-be generational player at a position that not only everyone wants, but that you particularly have not been good at for a very long time.
Very true.
So, decades. And you were able to get that. Now, you pair him with Rome Odunze.
Yes.
Now, this is an exciting pairing. It was cool seeing them at the drafts and all that together. But when you really look at what they did with that particular pick, it's exciting, especially considering the style that Caleb plays and the fact that he is going to be a rookie coming into a situation where he might have to, I don't know, not rely exactly on precision. Maybe he has to throw some contested catches, throw it up there, go get it. That's what Rome does. He was first amongst wide receivers with 100 targets this year. First in yards, 1,639 yards, 74 first downs, 21 contested catches, 75% contested catch rate, first among wide receivers with over 100 targets. I love this pairing.
He's real good.
I think this is great. I think it's great. I think it is a perfect match for Caleb Williams in Chicago. I love that they put them two together. We weren't really sure what they were going to do at that nine spot. Were they going to move back, get some more? I love that they stuck there and went with Rome Odunze. I think they're the biggest winner of the NFL draft.
I love that one a lot. Shay, you know he's Nigerian, in case you're wondering. You didn't ask, but I just wanted you to know.
I figured it was something like that.
2-5, who is your biggest winner of the NFL draft?
I'm going with the Cardinals, right? We always make our own opinion about Kyler Murray. How good is he really? Right? Yeah. He had some good years, had more bad years. But he hasn't had a real wide receiver, right? Now, Hawkins came over there for a little bit, up and down. But overall, he hasn't had that number one target. Well, Marvin Harrison Jr., he's that target,
that
right? You got talking about a guy that's ready for the NFL right now. One thing about getting these college players is some guys, like myself, had to develop into an NFL player, right? If it's the mental part of it or if the physical part of it, right? Mine was more the physical. I was I had a little boy body, right? I was 20 years old, youngest guy in the league when I got to my rookie year. But this guy is ready for the NFL right now. I know his dad very, 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 very well, right? And you could tell that he's a Hall of Famer. His dad's a Hall of Famer, the way he coaches him up. All the small things. When you watch these guys, small things like catch the ball, look at the eyes to the catch, yeah, right? That's so simple. A lot of players don't do it. When you watch this tape, you see all the fundamentals. And then last year with the Cardinals, they had a guy over 600 yards receiving, a wide receiver.
Wow.
So now you bring in a number one for sure generational talent. I got to give the Cardinals some respect. And if Kyler Murray don't get it done with this young rookie and see the growth and see some changes, it's time for him to move on next.
I do love what the Cardinals did, Dave, because we forget Kyler is a dynamic offensive player. Mm-hmm. Up and down, but he is dynamic. You had a dynamic wide receiver. I love what they did with Trey Benson. I believe it was in the third round, running back out of Florida State. He's nice. James Conner's a little bit of power. I believe that Trey Benson can add a little bit of extra burst, lightning, thunder combination there. I love what the Cardinals did.
And they got an edge rusher, too, though.
Yes, sir, in that second round.
Darius, yep, from Missouri. Darius Robinson, yep. Pretty good.
Dave, bring it home. Biggest winner, NFL draft.
I mean, look, there's so many. The Cardinals are a great answer. I love the Eagles. I love, you know, Washington did something fun. You get Jaden Daniels, you build your defense with some
other
picks.
You love Dallas.
Dallas had an all right draft. A lot of teams had good drafts, but my thing, Acho, like bringing up the Eagles, for instance, yeah, they got better, but they were already a contender.
Yeah.
You know, the Cardinals got a lot better, but do we view them as a team that's going to contend? I say no. The answer is the Chicago Bears. Mm. Because I think when you look at it in totality, the Bears did the biggest jump from irrelevancy into relevancy in one afternoon. I mean, in an hour and a half, you got Caleb Williams, which we all expected, and Rome Odunze, which was not a given. A lot of teams were interested in this guy. It was Odunze, Malik Nabers, and Marvin Harrison Jr. We all knew they were going to go, all three of them, top 10. They all did. Would the Bears get him? Would they be forced to settle for an offensive lineman? Something like that? No. You supercharge an offense that already had DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. And by the way, I'm going to cheat a little bit, but just keep in mind, two of the Bears' big draft picks in this class provided Montez Sweat, a star edge rusher, and Keenan Allen, a potential Hall of Famer at receiver. So in totality, you get Caleb, Rome Odunze, Montez Sweat, Keenan Allen. The Bears went from finishing fourth in their division. They might still finish fourth because it's that tough of a division, but we're talking about them at the top of shows. They are getting airtime. They are a team to take seriously from this point on, and I just don't know how many teams can say that. So I think
didn't
it
take
is.
You for a cheater, Dave.
It counts.
You
it
know
counts.
Who I can't take seriously? Who I left the draft disgusted with and disgusted by. Disgusted.
Okay.
The Las Vegas Raiders.
Ooh.
Disgusted?
Disgusted. The most important position, the most important pick, and you didn't get a quarterback. You didn't get a quarterback. Because you cannot roll into the season, Raiders, with Aiden O'Connell and Gardner Minshew as your starters. Gardner Minshew is a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal backup quarterback. I believe he would be the best backup quarterback in football. But Gardner Minshew should not be your starting quarterback if you are hoping to compete legitimately in the playoffs. How in the world can you go to proverbial war, not literal, obviously, how can you go to war against Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes and Sean Payton with Gardner Minshew? I love Gardner Minshew as a backup. He would be the best backup. But you did not try hard enough to attain a quarterback. In my mind, there were five, potentially six quarterback needy teams in the NFL draft. The Chicago Bears, the Minnesota Vikings, the Denver Broncos, the New England Patriots, the Commanders, and maybe the Giants. Maybe.
Yeah, throw the
maybe.
Giants in there, yeah.
The Raiders, you let everybody else go get quarterbacks. You let the Patriots, you let the Commanders, you let the Bears, you let the Broncos, you watch the Vikings, and you sat there and said, I'm good enough with Gardner Minshew. So now you have stocked the cupboard, you got Devontae Adams, you got Brock Bowers, but you ain't got no chef. So the reason I'm disgusted with the Raiders picks is not because I don't think Brock Bowers is legitimate, but Joy, it's the most important position, most important to the franchise, and it was your most important pick, and you were the one quarterback needy team that didn't go get a quarterback? Terrible math. Terrible math.
It's not great math. I don't know if I would give them that they let the Patriots in Washington go, because they picked where they picked, and why are you going to make that kind of a jump for
correct.
A player that you're not completely infatuated in love with? I'm assuming that their strategy is to...
What is it? I'm waiting on this sentence.
work on it next year. I mean, build up the roster and work on it next year. I mean, that sucks for Davante Adams, obviously, right. But if you're picking where they picked, not to push back too much on it because I have a different answer, but if you're picking where they picked, there are certain teams where you didn't have a say in it. Well, the Patriots and Washington, those teams, I don't think you had a say in moving and jumping ahead of. And how much, when you look at their roster and all the needs that they have, how much were they willing to give up to move that far ahead in the draft? I don't know. Maybe you move up to 8, you get
that's
you get
my Penix. Thought.
They picked 13th. And this was the first year in history that 6 quarterbacks went in the top 12. Like they were all gone, all of those quarterbacks.
But Dave, here's my problem. You watch the Vikings. The Vikings picked at 11, but why in the world on your screen does it say 10? Because the Vikings said, wait a second, Jets, y'all might draft McCarthy. Jets was pump faking, but the Vikings were so determined to draft a quarterback because their head coach, Kevin O'Connell, he knows they need one. They said, you know what? We're going to move up one spot. We're going to move up one spot just in case the Jets might try to potentially think about drafting a quarterback. Y'all not going to play on our dime.
But if they were to move up one spot,
they have to move up. In my mind, you got
to move up
to 8.
Several spots.
Yes.
Yeah.
I guess in the game of musical chairs, Shady, in the game of musical chairs, Dave, you can't be the one standing when the music stops. And to me, the Raiders are standing because the Broncos got a quarterback, though I don't love them. The Vikings got a quarterback, though I don't love them. But at least they got quarterbacks.
I love them.
So I hear you. I don't like it. I'm not excited about what they've got going on there either. But if there is job security there. If there is, yep. Which is a big if because it is the Raiders. But if there is, and you look around that division, if there wasn't somebody that you loved.
Yep.
Or even just kind of like, why are you using that haul to get him instead bolster the roster? But that only works, in my opinion, and I think what you're saying as well, is if you have some longevity to actually build up what you're planning on building there. So if they can be patient, if Raiders fans can be patient, if the organization can be patient, and they're all on the same page with the plan, I'm okay with that move if you picked where you picked rather than moving up. The Bills is what I'm confused about. I don't really love doing losers and winners and drafts too much because we're really not going to know the answer to this for like 3 years. So take the receipts if you want. You're not going to get to cash them likely for 3 years because that's really how long we take to evaluate whether someone has been a good pick or not a good pick. And he could contribute right away. I think Keon Coleman is a nice choice. What confuses me about the Bills' strategy is you let someone go like a Stephon Diggs. When we zoom out from the draft and we have known commodities, which I think Shady and I are very much on the same page with a lot of this, which I would prefer a veteran that I know what they're capable of, with I know the product that they can give me in the NFL over an unknown when I'm dealing with a known commodity in my quarterback. So really what the Bills are doing is kind of secretly relaunching their organization. They just have their franchise quarterback. Mm-hmm. That's really what they're doing. They're going all young. They're moving in a completely different direction. If you're moving on from Stephon Diggs for not off-the-field issues, for not injuries, for not money, it's just personality, I'm going to need you to be aggressive in replacing him because that's not a good enough reason to me. Being difficult is not a, like, figure it out. I'm sorry. You get paid lots of money to figure personalities out. That's part of your job is to make this work. The talent is limited. There's only so much great at anything. So if they were going to make that decision to move on from Stephon Diggs, I feel like you should be aggressive about replacing him. And I don't feel like they were aggressive. In fact, they were kind of like, they were literally moving back. they're kind of like sliding off of the aggression in a way. And I don't know if the sports gods necessarily reward that. So, and on top of that, you helped the Chiefs. Like, you moving on and moving in the direction that you did in the draft ended up helping the Chiefs get a player in a position that they need, and Xavier Worthy. So I'm just kind of confused, I guess, by the Bills' draft strategy, particularly that position, because it's such a important position to replace.
Shady, take me into the mindset real quick of the elite NFL player, because you've been in Buffalo and you've been the all-pro player and you looked around and you said, you know what, there's not enough talent here. There ain't enough talent here for me to win with. You tell the story eloquently whenever you do tell it. Not asking you to tell that story, but make yourself the Buffalo Bills player. We've been there. You watching the draft. And you're sitting here saying, okay, we ain't got Diggs. Maybe we should make a move up. Wait, we traded with the Chiefs draft a receiver. Okay, we did get a receiver in the second round. As an offensive player, looking at the depth chart the Bills have now versus what it was 3 months ago, how are you feeling?
Well, it's going to be different. I mean, like, we only talk about the offense, but if you look at the defense, they have so many players that are removed from the winning teams from the Buffalo, right? So you got to address that. And they kind of did that. But it's not going to be the same like the veterans they had in the locker room. Yep. And then on offense, you know what? I actually like that pick. I think Keon Coleman is a perfect fit for Josh Allen, right? We all want to see a speedster, but that's what known for the Chiefs. That's what they do best, right? look at the Bills, they're not really used to the speedsters. Yep. Like, if you look at Stephon Diggs, he's a guy that wants a volume of catches, volume of routes, right? Ball all the time, chopping up and down the field. You get a guy like Keon Coleman who can catch those type of passes, right? The contesting catches you talked about earlier. He can do that. Big body, the scramble drills you need, all the type of things. So I like what they're doing, but I will say this. The Bills do not seem like a scary team again.
Yep.
Like they used to be.
It's a big in 17 we trust kind of year.
Yeah. You know,
they shed a lot of big contracts. They're going to be asking Josh Allen to pick up the slack there. And I think their willingness to do that signals that to me, which if I'm a Bills fan, I can't say I love that. You know what I mean? For me, I love the musical chairs analogy you brought up because I'm still baffled. I'm not going to say I'm disgusted. I'm baffled by the team that wound up with a quarterback. Like, you're like, oh, you don't want to be left with the chair. I would have loved it if the Falcons had sat out of this. And say, here, Raiders, take Michael Penix Jr. at 13. He might actually get to play. We might actually get to watch Michael Penix Jr. instead of saying, well, in a best-case scenario, when he's 27 years old, we'll get to find out what Michael Penix Jr. is all about. I sat with it all weekend. It happened Thursday night. I'm still not over it. I really don't think I ever.
I got a question for you, Dave.
I won't be over Falcons spending a top 10 pick on a quarterback 6 weeks after they spent $180 million on Kirk
But here's the thing, Dave. Sometimes, and let's all go back to high school for a second. Sometimes you hear somebody give the right answer, but when the teacher tells them to explain the answer, you like, you sound so wrong. Is it the fact that the Falcons' explanation for drafting Penix is coloring your opinion? Because, yes, I don't like their explanation. Their explanation, it sounded to some degree irrational. But I still don't hate the move. Are you more upset by the move or the explanation behind the move?
I hate it all, Acho. I hate the whole thing. And I'll say it one more time. I said it on the show before. I'll say it again. I like Michael Penix Jr. He could be
real
successful. He could be successful in Atlanta. He could be successful in Vegas on a team where there's options for him to throw the ball. Yeah, we got the quote right here where Terry Fontenot, the GM of the Atlanta Falcons, said, if you believe in a guy, you take him. And if he doesn't play for 4 or 5 years, so be it.
But that's what I'm asking you.
No.
Is it the quote that you hate?
No,
because obviously that I don't like the sound of that. I do not like the sound of that.
4 or 5 years.
Exactly. I don't like the sound of that.
They did not run that through.
I don't like that. That's bad. That was bad.
Comes down to for me.
Blank is pissed.
He probably is.
He wasn't happy in the draft.
See the clip of, Terry trying to explain it to him? The issue for me is like, and we bring up Jordan Love when we do this. We bring up Dak Prescott when we do this. We bring up Jalen Hurts. That was another example where a team with a quarterback drafted another guy to have him ready. There's a difference between being committed to a guy that you already promised hundreds of millions of dollars to and trying to find a succession plan, as opposed to ending the year in January knowing you're going to pick top 10 and still signing Kirk Cousins.
Like I have a question. If Penix was younger, would you feel the same way?
Yes. It's still an irrational use of a major asset. Because look at it. Look at it this way.
Because it was top 10.
Yes.
So if it was later in the first round, would you care?
No, I wouldn't care at all. I might care a little bit, but I would not care as much as I do if it's pick number 8. Because here's what it boils down to. Even if Michael Penix Jr. is great 5 years from now, that means that you wasted 3 years paying Kirk Cousins when this guy could have been doing it on a cheap contract. So you're wasting the rookie contract. And if Kirk Cousins turns out to be great, then you wasted the opportunity to use a top 10 pick on somebody else.
Okay, but
there's no scenario where the Falcons didn't overinvest here. That's all.
Yeah,
I'm
they
saying.
Win a Super Bowl, then they win.
If they cool, good luck, guys.
If they win a Super Bowl,
if
they get to an NFC Championship game, then I'm cool with it. Go ahead.
Well, I'm curious because we keep talking around Kirk Cousins. Let's talk about Kirk Cousins. Shady, if I'm not mistaken, when you was in Philly, they didn't draft a running back. I think Bryce Brown in the 7th round. So it was Shady McCoy's job. It's always Shady McCoy's job. Shady, you're the all-time leading rusher. If you are Kirk Cousins, how should he feel right now?
He should be confused. Like, what are we trying to do? You tell me I'm the guy for this team right now, and you give me all this money, and then a couple months later, you draft a quarterback, an 8th pick? So it's like, what do you want to believe? So now, no matter how good I do, eventually my time's going to be up here, right? Because we only thinking, okay, in 2 years, you got to move on. But what if I'm balling, though? Right, I'm moving my family here, I'm balling, right? Let me finish my contract out. And you're telling me I can't? That's going to be the issue. I'm telling you right now, I've seen it happen before. What's going to happen is Penix is going to do well in camp, mm-hmm. right? He's going to do well in the preseason games, and it's going everybody's going to be talking about it. Kirk's going to be the starter. He's going to come out here. He's going to be balling, going to ball. They're getting better and better and better. They're going to lose in the playoffs, get real close, lose in the playoffs. The third year is like, what do we do? Because we got this close with Kirk. We paid him, and then we got a rookie that we want to take over. My thing is this. You are trying to accomplish a goal, and the way you're going by it is like you're going through this big, crazy maze, right? And the Celtics make it simplifying everything.
I guess if maybe I look at it differently in the sense that Penix can sit for a year. One, I don't know what this Kirk Cousins situation is going to look like. Like, we're making an assumption that Kirk is going to come in and be fine off of this Achilles injury, adjust to this new situation.
What if
perfectly.
He's not? But let's say
but
he's not.
But if he's not, then you have somebody in the building.
But do you see what I'm saying, how that works? Even if you're not ready to go, right, and now we draft as your replacement, it's a big debt.
It is a big debt, but at the time that they paid that, ran that check, that was the option that you had. And I think that when you looked at how the draft went, none of us expected it to go chalk, and that was a surprise to us and clearly to the Falcons because they weren't planning on taking him. They really liked him, and I think it was
maybe they were, though.
Here's the crazy thing, you thought that the Chargers and the Cardinals were going to stay there.
No, I didn't. But I didn't think Michael Penix Jr. was going to be a top 10 pick either. I thought Vegas made a hell of a lot of sense at pick 13 for him to go. And he went five spots ahead of that.
To me, though, it's all irrelevant so long as the Falcons win, whoever they win with.
Here's why.
Let's go back to Seattle, 2012. Can we go back to 2012 for a moment?
Sure.
When they acquired Matt Flynn, they paid a lot of money for Matt Flynn. Matt Flynn, I think, was a top 10, top 11 highest paid quarterback at the time back in 2012. You draft a third round pick. So to Dave's point, it was a third round pick on Russell Wilson. Not a big deal. It's a third round pick. But then Russ ends up starting. Now you look stupid, Pete Carroll. You look stupid, John Snyder. Y'all look dumb because you paid Matt Flynn, big-time money to be your starter. Then this third-round pick out of Wisconsin that transferred from NC State, he's starting now? Wait a second, that's bad math. But Seahawks go to 2 Super Bowls in 3 years. If it works out for Kirk or Penix, I don't know that we care. Same thing with the Eagles and Carson Wentz. I don't know that they care because Jalen Hurts took them back to a Super Bowl. So I feel the anger right now. But at the end of the day, Dave, if you acquire talent at the most important position, how is that a bad thing?
First of all, be nice to Matt Flynn. He's an LSU Tiger. But I hate to push back, but like the Seahawks signed Matt Flynn to a very like, let's see what you got type of deal. You know, he started like 5 games in Green Bay. They did pay him a lot of money.
They did. That was my point.
But not by QB1 standards. They paid like the whole contract was worth like $40 million, which is a lot.
Back then it was a lot.
It's still not compared to $200 million.
Yeah. But it's
which
really
the
like
same a- guy, the crazy thing to me, I'm sorry, Joy, the crazy thing is these same guys, Terry Fontenot and Raheem Morris and everybody in Atlanta, these same guys 6 weeks ago, like we're sitting here like, what if Kirk's not the same? What if he doesn't come back from this Achilles? They looked at him and said, no, we're good with this. We're going to pay you $100 million guaranteed. You're our guy. And at the same time, they were apparently falling in love with this rookie quarterback. How does that add up?
Hey, it happens to men all the time.
I hear you. I think I'm with Acho. Like
if they win the Super Bowl, fine.
Like it just doesn't matter.
I want to take it back to Shady's point. What if like, okay, first of all, if Kirk balls, let's say they fall short. How do guys on the team feel about the fact that the backup quarterback could have been an 8-10 sack edge rusher? Or, and I don't wish this on Michael Penix Jr. at all. I hope he's great. But Shady, you know that. Y'all both know this. What if they get to training camp and the team is like, ooh, this guy's not ready. This guy's not ready to start in the big leagues. And now everybody on the team is like, this could have been a guy that's going to help us.
Let me give you a curveball. Joy talks about it. We don't spend enough time talking about it at all, and I think we should spend way more time talking about it. Kirk Cousins is coming off of an Achilles, family. An Achilles. There is no guarantee at all that Kirk Cousins is going to come back throwing for his usual, you know, 4,200 yards and 30 touchdowns a season. So it might just be the wisest thing that the Falcons do, because coming back at 35, he's going to be 36 in August off an Achilles injury. Maybe you have a security blanket.
Why'd they sign him then?
Because you didn't know if you could get Penix.
Because you didn't know you were going to be able to get the guy that you liked in the draft.
They had a top 10 pick. They could make it happen if they wanted to.
Yeah, but Dave, we're talking now.
I love this conversation.
We didn't know this was going to happen.
Well, what we do know is that the Bears had 2 top 10 picks, and they executed masterfully. Caleb Williams at number 1. Roma Dunze at number 9. But now Caleb Williams is saying to his punter that they drafted in the 4th round, hey, don't worry, you're not going to have to punt very much. He says, we not ducking no smoke. We are here to stay. Is he too confident, though? That's next on Speak. Don't forget, you can check us out every day on the Fox Sports Channel on SiriusXM. No surprise when the Bears took Caleb Williams number 1 overall, supposed to be a phenom. But Caleb has incredibly high expectations. You all are going to want to hear this. Turn your volumes up and take a listen. Caleb, speak up.
There's no reason to duck. I'm here. Rome's here. Keenan Allen, you know, top 5 defense that we had last year. You know, special teams, all the new roles, whatever. You know, we're here. So I'm excited. I know everybody's excited. The Bear fans are excited from what I've heard and seen. And there's no reason to duck. You know, attack it, you know, head first and go get it.
Shady McCoy, you got 2 Super Bowls, so you know exactly what it's like to go get it. You got a little bit of hardware, a lot of bit of hardware yourself. Is Caleb Williams too confident, though, from what you're hearing?
No, he's just right. He's letting you know what it is. Y'all not surprised I was the first pick overall. Y'all knew this was going to happen months ago, years ago. And he's here to tell you that. We it's no ducking. We can't hide. Everything you heard about me is true. I'm going to show y'all how good I am. I'm going to show you I'm generational, right? And I love it. Like, one thing I always give rookies, they always like, yo, what type of, advice you have for me? And I say, yo, the same player that you thought you was in college, the same dude you thought you was and how good you played, be the same way, have that same attitude. Don't come here trying to fit in as a rookie. Nah. If you was a bad mother in college, you're going to be a bad mother in the league. And if you wasn't a bad mother in the league and you was a bad mother in college, that means you really wasn't that good. Because what do I always tell you?
Everybody's good in college.
So I feel like if Kellen Williams is as good as we think he is, he's going to have that same attitude, and you're going to see how good he really is when he plays.
I love it. I agree with Caleb Williams. I agree with Shady McCoy. I love Caleb's confidence because Caleb is looking at the roster how we are looking at the roster. And the Chicago Bears roster, in my mind, at least offensively in the NFC, 3rd at worst. I like the Eagles. I like the Niners. And then I'm looking at the Chicago Bears, and there is nobody I would take over them. I would take some teams alongside them, the Detroit Lions, but there aren't too many teams that I would take over them. And then defensively, after week 10, the Bears were number 1 as it pertains to total defense. So you got a top 5 defense. Let's not assume they'll be number 1. Let's give you a more humble expectation. You got a top 5 defense, and then you have an offense that all of us would take very early on. And even you, if you don't know the roster, turn on your Madden video game, look who they got out there, and then you're probably going to want to play with that squad. All of us would take that roster offensively. Look at the talent on your screen. DeAndre Swift, the top 5 running back, asked the all-time leading rusher to my right. You got DJ Moore. You got Keenan Allen, went for 1,200 last year. DJ Moore went for another 1,200 last year. Then you got Roma Dunze, a top 10 pick for a reason. On top of that, you got Cole Kmet. You got Everett at backup tight end. You got Roschon Johnson at backup running back. I think they still have Deontay Freeman, Dave Hellman-Craigman, if I'm wrong, at backup Foreman at backup running back. So you not only have talent, you got depth. And depth matters because if your starting tight end gets hurt, you still got Everett. Oh, if Keenan Allen gets hurt, it's cool. You still got Adunze and DJ Moore. DJ Moore gets hurt, it's fine. You still got Keenan Allen and Roma Dunze. Roma Dunze get hurt, it's fine. You still got Keenan Allen, DJ Moore. You got backups even to your phenomenal starters. So when I look at the squad that the Bears have, and it's a very talented squad, Joy Taylor led by a phenomenal, talented quarterback, what's there to duck for? Who you ducking from?
I don't think he's too confident at all. You know what I always say. I do not believe in humble. I don't know who it's for. I don't know what it's for. I don't need him walking in with his lunch pail. First of all, he's the face of the organization. You guys just mentioned all the things that they have to be excited about on the roster. But there's so much more to it than that. The Bears haven't had anything to be truly excited about, maybe be aspirational about, but be excited about, especially at this position, in a very long time. Then you look at the roster. Then you look at who he is. He's being his authentic self. Yep. What does he need to go in there and say? Well, you know, we're just going to try and be better this year.
1% better every day.
Yeah, you know, just go and grind and do the work. What is the value of quarterback speak at this point?
Yeah.
We are not playing games yet. This is all should be all be positive. Everyone in the city should be excited. Everyone in the organization should be excited. All the players should be excited. The coaches, the front office. And he should be speaking life into the situation at all times. Everyone in the organization from the very top to the very bottom should be walking into work every day, not just excited, but feeling like they're a part of building excellence. And that starts with how he talks about the team and how he is excited to show up and what he is excited to build there. Of course he should be confident. Of course he should be saying that they're going to do great things. Why would he come out there and say they're going to do okay things? Like, well, we're just going to, you know, we're just going to do our best. We can have our realistic expectations. We can overanalyze and say that, okay, if they just do this, that'll be good enough. But their aspirations should be bigger. Also, guess what? You're selling tickets. You're selling merch. This is an entertainment business. Give it a little zhuzh, you know? Have a little fun. What is there to be afraid of right now? It's May. Like, be excited. You just got drafted. You got Roma Dunze. You can sit back and say, these are now my teammates. What's happening in Chicago is exciting. He should be excited about it, and he should not be humble or setting low expectations for who.
Dave, let me ask you this, not to pivot the conversation, but to get to a deeper level, because I assume your answer is you like his confidence.
No, I don't. I love it. I love his
confidence. In the event that his confidence is not just to promote tickets, but his confidence is genuinely coming from within, my only sliver of concern, and it's a whisper in the back of my ear, Dave Hellman, is, now, Caleb, it is about to be difficult. So if you're telling your fourth-round punter, hey, don't trip, we're not going to punt all that much, hey, you might. You might early on. I don't know if you're not. Like, the only whisper of me that had a little bit of trepidation was, Caleb, make sure you just stay tempered enough so you never get too high, never too low. Make sure you're ready to take on whatever punch you get thrown when you do have a two-pick game, a three-pick game, whenever it does go a little bit more difficult. Did you think about that at all, or are you just...
I just want to point out, in fairness to Caleb, that comment that he made to Torrey Taylor, the new punter, He told him that in confidence. Torrey Taylor brought that to the media.
Yeah, he was like,
he didn't get up on a podium and be like, we ain't punting in Chicago anymore. Like, he didn't say that. No. I mean, Caleb Williams has, he's already been through the ringer to a degree.
Like punters.
He's got.
Like, why the hell do you want to tell the world that? You got one job to do is use one side of your foot. And you want to tell the world what the quarterback said?
It's a bar, though. It's such a good line. Like, I'm glad we know it. No, Caleb.
Hilarious.
Caleb knows the highs of winning the Heisman. They went 7-5 at SC in a much anticipated season. You know how brutal that is. This dude, he's been in the spotlight for so long. I think, like, I want Caleb to talk his junk because he's in the unfortunate position of already having haters.
Yeah, of course.
He hasn't done anything. He already has haters because he's good. He played for SC, which is a polarizing team. Paints his nails. Yeah. He was on a magazine in a robe or whatever that was. Like, he's already in the situation where people are rooting for him to fail. And I thought about this while we were listening to this clip. I think a lot of the average NFL fan is just now even hearing what his voice sounds like.
Yeah, very true.
You know? And so if you're already in that situation where a lot of people are going to be against you anyway, just embrace it.
Let me ask you this, though, Dave, because you know a quarterback incredibly well who has a lot more attention than Caleb, Dak Prescott. Mm. Dak never gets high, never gets low. It's always good for Dak. Everything's great. It's always like, yeah, we had a lot of work cut out for us, but we're going to take it on the right way. I'm worried about my teammates. Dak would never say we ain't punting a lot. He would never say...
That's different. Dak would absolutely say that in a private conversation. It might not come out. That's fair. You got to talk to the punter.
Given the juxtaposition of those approaches, which do you prefer? As somebody who covers the sport writing.
As somebody who's covered Dak Prescott for a long time, nothing makes me happier than when Dak lets it slip. You know, like when Dak shows his real competitive, edgy side that he tries to keep buttoned up. I think Caleb's going to learn this, too. You got to be diplomatic as a quarterback to a degree. Every single quarterback has to be diplomatic. You're the face of the franchise. But you can still find room in there to put your own personality on it. There are plenty of quarterbacks in the NFL these days that let their personalities shine. The first guy that comes to mind is Lincoln Riley's other guy, Baker Mayfield. But, I mean, there's plenty of them. I think you... Wait, who?
He said Tua, not Tua. He said Tua.
I was like,
he
left. Tua. No.
Joy, is the fear, though, and quickly, because obviously we're going to transition to this topic here, so this actually works. Is the fear the back end of the conversation? Think about Devin Booker, and we're going to talk about the Suns getting swept here in a moment. Devin Booker, the clip that is going viral right now is Devin Booker earlier on in the offseason saying, respectfully, I don't know who's going to be able to guard us. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Bradley Beal, Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, mm-hmm. respectfully, y'all just got swept. So is the fear of when you do talk that confidently, when you do put yourself out there, when you do tell your punter, we're not going to punt, if all of a sudden by week three, week four, the Bears lead the league in punting, is that the trepidation that comes with being so braggadocious is we are playing the Devin Booker sound. Y'all will likely hear it in 5 minutes, and it is goofy because they just got swept. And he said, who's going to be able to guard us? Is that the trepidation that you run into?
I have right here, it's so much more fun to be proud and loud and right mm-hmm. than it is to be humble and be bad. Mm-hmm. I'll take the risk. If that's who you are, and this is authentically who Caleb is, I don't think he's putting on for anything. I think he's excited. I think he's excited to play with the players that they have in the building. I think he was excited to be the number one overall pick. I think he knows he's good as hell and has a bright future in the biggest league in the world playing a sport that he loves. I think all of that's authentic. Talk. What? And then he goes out and he lives up to it? That is way more fun than coming in and just being shy and saying the right thing. Give us a little quarterback speak here and there. And then you're also not good? I'll take the other side of it. Now, listen, I'm somebody who enjoys that part of it, and I do that myself. But you're betting on yourself. Who's better to bet on?
Yeah.
So he can go out and answer all these questions. And at the end of the day, so what? So what? So, okay, so the Suns got swept. We're going to talk about them in a second. And it doesn't look great. It doesn't look great. Okay. But imagine if he said that, and they did it. Like, then you get to put that on a shirt. You know what I'm saying? So, like, the swing of that is worth it to me, and that's what makes sports exciting. That's what writes the stories. That's what writes the books. That's what inspires the documentaries. Those type of things, those guaranteeing a championship and winning can take you a very long way. It can also mean that it's going to get put on
The lower third. You should be lower third.
But it's worth it. You should be excited.
They should be. Who shouldn't be excited, though? The Phoenix Suns. Devin Booker, Bradley Beal, Frank Vogel, Kevin Durant, nobody. None of them should be excited. How bad is a sweep for KD's legacy? If you want to be an all-time great, you got to get this all-time great smoke, and I'm coming with it on the other side of this commercial break. That's next.
Hey, what's up?
Vic, where you at, man? Get loose. The Timberwolves took out the brooms and swept the Suns yesterday. Kevin Durant's teams have been swept in two of the last three seasons since he left Golden State. He hasn't gotten past the conference semifinals. Bring us on camera, please. Y'all need to see this face to the far, far left. NBA analyst Slick Rick the Bugler. I can't wait to hear what you have to say once again. All-time great players. They get an all-time great smoke. But Shady, let me delay my smoke. You know, Shady, how bad is this loss for Kevin Durant?
It's bad. I mean, I hate when KD doesn't deliver because he's how good he is, how great
God.
He is, how special.
You tell me,
KD is the God. But the thing
we changed it.
No.
It used to be the God.
No, he's not.
Well, now it's the God.
It's God. Yeah, I swear. God is having a nice vacation on the way. See, but this is the issue I hate about the Kevin Durant slander. Is this like? He loses his game and they get swept. Bradley Beal, Booker, and KD. KD's gonna get all the smoke for this. Mm-hmm. Right? They're not gonna talk about how bad Beal played. Bradley Beal, from what I remember, was a hell of a player. Solid defense and could score when he wanted to. When I watch him now, he's struggling to score on Anthony Towns. It's like they talk about the mismatches in basketball. So when the Wolves, when they went big with their bigs, cool. But then on the other side, they got a guard.
Yeah.
There's no reason why Bradley Beal can't score on Anthony Towns. That doesn't even make sense. 9 points on an elimination game? What are we talking about here? And then on defense, you can't guard nobody. I watched Ant-Man going left, right, in the middle, pause, left. He was doing everything he wanted to do. So when we talk about Kevin Durant getting swept, I get it. I understand it, right? But we're not going to talk about how bad Bradley Beal played. Mm-mm. And nobody's ever going to talk about that. The first thing I'm going to say is, yo, since he left Steph Curry, what's he done?
Yeah.
That's everybody's argument now.
Of course.
And I hate it because Kevin Durant gets dragged in the whole mud for this. But his other supporting cast didn't show up either.
Oh, supporting cast.
Right? Yeah. So when we talk about this big three, right? Yes, we love to talk about LeBron James getting his championships in Miami. We love to talk about how Dwayne Wade this and that third. But we never talk about how Bosh
seal some of that deal. We never talk about Ray Allen getting a shot in the corner. Like, those things Damn. Matter. So, yes, I'm going to let you cook and kill my man with extra pepper, extra salt, right? Right? And then you're going to sprinkle in the little, you know what I mean?
Put the cayenne on
it. Yeah.
I got a little bit.
And you're going to give Joy a little wine. I get what y'all doing. But all I'm saying is be respectful with KD and talk about Bradley Beal.
Yes, sir.
And talk about
yes,
Devin
sir.
Booker finally
sir.
Showing up.
Let me be respectful, can I? Let me be respectful. You button up. No. Let me address Kevin Durant respectfully.
Mm. Let me sit up.
Please do.
How's my
all-time great? All-time great players got to get all-time great smoke. Kevin Durant, I would suggest, may be the only all-time great player that's not a force multiplier. He may be the only all-time great player that does not make those that play with him greater. Think about it historically, and I'll bring you to present day. Russell Westbrook was better without Kevin Durant than he was with Kevin Durant. He was an NBA MVP. James Harden was better without Kevin Durant than he was with Kevin Durant. He was an NBA MVP. Steph Curry was better without Kevin Durant than he was with Kevin Durant. He was a finals MVP along with a unanimous MVP. Kyrie Irving was better without Kevin Durant than he was with Kevin Durant. Kyrie Irving went to the NBA Finals and also won. Devin Booker was better without Kevin Durant than he was with Kevin Durant. He was first team All-NBA. Players are not their best versions of themselves when they play with Kevin Durant. Now, Kevin Durant is an incredibly talented player, but it is the burden of talented players to make everybody around them better than they were, than they showed up. Shaq, Kobe, Duncan, Bill, Walt, Kareem, Michael, Magic, Bird. If you played with them, you got better. But when you play with Kevin Durant, you don't necessarily get better. So that's why it is no surprise that Kevin Durant joined the all-time best team as it pertains to regular season record and was able to win. Because he didn't need to make them better. He just had to show up and be great. But when he has to make you better, he doesn't. The reason Kevin Durant is getting the smoke and not Bradley Beal, because we will talk about Kevin Durant in 10, 15, 20, 30, 40, and 50 years. We will not be talking about Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal is an incredible player, but he is a forgettable player. Kevin Durant will be remembered for the rest of the game's entirety. Decades, centuries, years to come. So if you're going to be an all-time great, you got to get all-time great smoke. If you're going to be an all-time great, then you got to make others around you as great as they've ever been in their time. That's where I put it.
Somebody been cooking just now. Oh, my.
That was a good take,
goodness.
Man. I hate to hear it.
Wow.
It's like they say, man.
What happened, Joy?
Wow.
I don't know what's
like,
happening.
It's like they tell her, I hate to say like leave, but I love to see her walk away. It's one of them takes. Like, it was super good, but I hate to hear it.
Yeah, we had to sit with it for a second.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Joy.
No, 100%. Now, the one issue I will take is
Yes, sir.
There's two issues there. Love the take. Love that idea about force multiplier. But you made him out to be a detractor, and I wouldn't say he's that.
Sure.
The less than. But I do agree that, one, the reason that we critique him more than we do a Bradley Beal is because we expect more from Kevin Durant because he's done way more than Bradley Beal has. Bradley Beal having to be an efficient accessory is something that he's never had to be. When he's been good, he's been a volume shooter, he's been a main piece. And when everything is built around you, you can look good in ways that when now you have to play alongside better players, you don't get the same touches, you don't get the same looks, you don't get the same frequency. So that can be the effect. There is another player like Kevin Durant, and it's Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard I would put in the same category as a great individual player. You added him to Toronto. You added him to the formula in San Antonio, and he wins championships. You now make him the central piece, and he's not that galvanizer.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't elevate necessarily everybody. He's great in his own right, but he's not creating that culture. And that to me is what KD has proved to be. Like, he's a booster rocket.
Yeah.
If you have the spaceship and you can get outside and into orbit or get to the moon, KD can take you to Mars.
Yeah.
But if you don't have the rocket ship, then you've got this really expensive booster that doesn't necessarily take you anywhere because you need the vehicle for him to move it.
Mm.
And that's what I think has been proven once again with the Phoenix Suns, because this, I'm not even blaming KD. This was a poorly constructed team.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what else he could have done. He played 75 games. That's the most games he's played since the Achilles tendon tear. Shooting-wise, point-wise, like, all his numbers were good. He was a good two-way, very good two-way player this year. I wouldn't have expected more because this was a flawed team.
Yep.
But I think what he did was he just he confirmed that feeling like if you give him the right vehicle, he can take you places. But you have to give him the right vehicle.
Yeah. Hmm. This is not KD's fault. Sorry. Agreed. Gotta do it. It's not KD's fault. Was not KD's fault. I know what Kevin Durant is. I've seen it with my own eyes. You were just talking about it. I've seen KD do it. I've seen KD be the best player in the entire NBA and win championships. I've seen him do it in the right situation. I can't lay this at the feet of Kevin Durant. I'm sorry. This is a team game. And by the way, before I even get further into my take, I just give a little credit to the Timberwolves. They were tremendous. It is very hard to sweep any team. But a team with these three players who you did not beat during the regular season, you have an all-time player in Kevin Durant, and you sweep them. They were unbelievable on defense. They played with more energy. They wanted it more. They were scoring off of turnovers. They were causing turnovers. They were locked in the entire series. They were absolutely tremendous. We all overlooked them, and they deserve all the credit and flowers for playing the way that they did. They have superstars, and they were tremendous. Phoenix was bad, but they were tremendous, and they deserve credit for that. They ran into a buzzsaw in the Timberwolves. They did not play the way that we expected them to play, and it is not all on KD. Come on. This team was built a very particular way from the very beginning of the season. There was only one way you were going to win. There was only one way the Suns were going to win, and they didn't do the thing that they're supposed to do. We didn't talk about the roster, talk about the vehicle. They had the worst scoring bench in the NBA this season. There were some bad teams in the NBA this season. They had the worst scoring bench in the NBA. That's the definition of a top-heavy team.
Yeah,
they also played the number one defense. Like,
listen, and we don't like to talk about defense in the NBA. We don't even really like to think about it. Mm. But when you get to the postseason, teams that can lock in on defense, especially if you have a couple nights where you're struggling, and it will be a wrap. That's what happened.
I agree with that, though. I don't think it's KD's fault. I don't think it's KD's fault they lost. I think KD's at fault for not winning a game. And the reason I think he's at fault is because I give KD the most credit. LeBron James at least got one. And it wasn't really LeBron who got one. Reeves and D'Lo, I think, both had 21 points. So at the end of the day, they still found a way to get one. The reason I'll help give LeBron credit for getting that one is because, Shady, you've been in those locker rooms behind the scenes. After game three, when D'Lo is eating sunflower seeds or Gatorade chews, whatever he's eating on the bench, there's a decision that has to be made. I was shocked, Shady McCoy, when D'Lo started game four. Shocked. I was like, how in the world that happened? But LeBron is the leader of that team, and whatever Darvin Ham is the leader of that team, you find a way to rally the troops to get you one. Get you one. And KD has notably said, not once but twice, he said it on Saturday, he said the coach is a leader. We all speak up and talk, but the leader is a coach. Go back 2017 when he was with the Warriors. I don't want to have to be the leader. I'm not a leader. I'm bad at saying, stand behind me and follow me. I believe that it's in the fine print of being an all-time great. You have to be a leader. When you sign your name on it, it doesn't necessarily say it overtly. But in the fine print, in the very small print, to me, the most successful athletes of all time are also leaders, whether it's the Tom Brady, whether it's the Jordan, whether it's the LeBron, whether it's the Montana's, whether it's they're just leaders.
But I think it's everyone leads differently, though. Like, there are some all-time great players who we wouldn't necessarily say are the rah-rah guy in the locker room, who are the ones that are going to stand up and, to KD's point, say, follow me into the darkness, you know? Yeah. Like, there's different ways. He, to me, has always been somebody who's going to lead by going out and playing. Mm-hmm. He is going to go out on the court and perform at the highest level, and you can get behind that. Even when he was winning with the Warriors, I didn't think that KD was the leader of that team. Nope. He was the best player on that team.
Yep.
He was the best player in the finals, but he wasn't the leader of that team.
I just suggested, like, you have to be a galvanizer unless all the others around you are great. Leading by example is great in theory, and it's great on paper. Man, Shady did it, so Acho gonna go do it. Now, sometimes Acho might need a pick-me-up. Shady an all-time great. I can't just watch Shady go out there and rush for 200 and say, you know what, I'm gonna have 12 tackles this game. Sometimes I need the all-time great to also help me as well, particularly if they're in a position like a quarterback or an NBA, if they're a position of best player. When I think about the Duncans and the Dirks, they weren't the most vocal.
Right.
But, like, they still were vocal enough. Slick, I know you have words on this.
Yeah, so I agree. There's different ways to lead. And if you're not that vocal leader, then you need to have that from someone else on the team.
Right.
And that is the issue with the Phoenix Suns. Is Who is that? For the same way, I would say the same with the Los Angeles Clippers, for all their talent. Who is that player who, when things get a little rough, brings you together, not just goes out and tries to play different, but lets you know, like, I'm going to help you here, or this is what we need to do, or this is what I need from you so I can do what I do. And those teams don't have that. And the teams that are championship teams, I mean, you watch it. When Giannis won in Milwaukee, who was gathering them at that one point? You still have to have all the pieces, but you do need that one guy who says, when things go a little sideways, this is what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Not what, this is what I'm
going to do. Well said, well said. Well, the Dallas Cowboys, they got their leader back. Ezekiel Elliott, star running back, former top five pick for the Dallas Cowboys, officially signed back with them today. So there is a reunion. The 214 is back intact. That's Zeke and Dak Prescott. Dave Hellman, I know you're happy about this one. Maybe. Ezekiel Elliott rejoins his partner in crime, Dak Prescott, former top five pick to the Cowboys, signs a one-year deal. Zeke was a three-time Pro Bowler, formerly led the NFL in rushing in his heyday during his seven seasons in Dallas. Dave, let me ask you, big dog, because you covered the Cowboys well. You and I were both working for the Cowboys.
When they drafted?
When they drafted Ezekiel
Elliott.
We was both
right.
working there. So
where's the time going, man?
Does the reunion make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense, as long as we are honest about what this is.
What is it?
Signing a running back to a $2 million, $3 million contract to come in and play a role because you didn't draft one over the weekend.
What role?
Part of a committee. Zeke Elliott is here to be part of a committee. He could be the first guy out on the field if they want him to be, because then he gets credited with the start, and him and Dak get to do the 2-1-4 thing. It's gonna look dope when they're in the tunnel. You know, they come out of the tunnel together, like, Cowboys.
2-1-4, by the way, Dallas area code.
If you're, I mean, like, are we talking about Zeke Elliott, the rushing champion? Of course we're not. I looked this up. I mean, Zeke actually had a surprisingly good season in New England, I thought. You know, carrying the load for a bad offense. You can't see Acho right now, but his look on his face says
define surprisingly good.
Zeke has carried the ball so much. I'm not sure how much is left in his legs, but he gave him a useful 600 yards. And this is what Zeke is at this point. I think he's a veteran presence. He's a guy that a lot of guys in that locker room know and love. He can be your short yardage back, your goal line back. And that's probably about it at this stage in his career. Like, you're not getting the rushing champion. You're not getting a guy that's a threat to go to the house. I looked this up just for the record. Last year, 49 backs got the ball 100 or more times in the NFL. Zeke ranked tied for 45th in the number of 10-plus yard carries. He had eight. He had eight carries of 10-plus yards last year. Tied for fourth worst in the NFL. It's just not what he is anymore. Can he still be useful? Is he still, you hate when I say this, is he still a really good blocker? Absolutely. Absolutely he is. But he's going to be part of a committee. As long as we're honest about that and we're not expecting 2018 Zeke, then yeah, it's fine.
All-time leading rusher. There's no better opinion on running backs on national television of any kind than the opinion of you, LeSean Shady McCoy. Does Zeke to the Cowboys make sense?
Yes, it does. And I'm not taking the approach that Dave took. I'm taking a bigger approach.
What approach was that?
Want the old Zeke back. We want the Zeke with the half shirt cut out, showing his stomach, showing the ass.
Belly now.
Bringing back. We need Zeke with the belly, because Zeke with the belly was dangerous. No, but I love this move, though, because like you talked about, Joy, they didn't get a lot in with the running back so far, right, in the draft. They didn't really get it.
They didn't really get one.
Cool. Yeah. So my thing is, you bring Zeke back. He's still strong. He's still smart. He knows the offense, right? Another thing about Zeke I love is he knows the teammates.
Yeah. Right.
So there's going to be a point in time where maybe he's not as effective on the field, but he's going to be very effective not on the field. Coach the other running backs, right? Other wide receivers may need to be yelled at for missing a read. So things like that matters. And I think if you bring the core back together, it helps out. Mm. Brings the morale up on the team.
Now, the vibes are going to be high.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't know about the winning, but the vibes.
I don't know about the production,
hey,
but
man.
The vibes.
Joy, does it make sense?
Can you take vibes to the bank?
No, not last time I checked.
I mean, you totally could take some vibes to the bank.
You could take vibes to the bank. Are they going to put them in?
If you go into the bank, you got to have a good vibe.
You got to have a good vibe.
You know what I'm saying?
That's facts. That's facts.
That is how you want to go to the bank, with good vibes. I think it's fine, as long as the expectations are set right. I agree with Shady. I think he has a lot of value in the locker room. I think he has a lot of value in the offense. He still could be a good goal line back.
Sure.
So we're not going to get the Zeke of his rookie year. You know, that's not what he is anymore. But that's literally not what he is anymore. So as long as they are not expecting that from him, which I'm assuming there's some smart people in the building there, that they know that that's not what they're getting with him. Otherwise, they would have given him a different deal than they gave him. Mm-hmm. What is really the question to me is the rest of the running back room. Like, this is...
It's a very good question, Joy.
This is a committee if I've ever seen one.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that part is what is confusing to me. Maybe there's another planet coming.
It can't be.
Can be.
There could be. I don't expect it.
Here's why I hate it. Here's why I disagree with everybody at the desk. I hate it, but I have a very unique perspective in the NFL because I was a special teams player. I hate the Cowboys signing Zeke because of the roster imbalance issues. The roster's not balanced at all. You got three running backs, and they're all kind of starters, which means they all kind of have to start, which means who's going to play on teams? When you construct a roster, it's not just about your offense. It's not just about your defense. There are three phases to the game. We on national television, we just don't bore you with the third phase. But the third phase may be the most important phase. Philadelphia Eagles, they lost the Super Bowl to the Kansas City Chiefs in large part because of a big punt return. Who was on the punt return unit? Who's on the punt unit for the Eagles? Starting linebacker T.J. Edwards. Starters should not play special teams. And special teams players should not start. So if Zeke, Rico Dowdle, and Royce Freeman are all your starting three running backs, where is the roster balance? Philadelphia 2015, after we traded LeSean McCoy for Kiko Alonso, our starting linebackers were Kiko Alonso and D'Amico Ryans. But we just paid Michael Kendricks like a four-year, $28 million deal. We had the most expensive kickoff player ever in Michael Kendricks. We acquired Miles Austin from the Dallas Cowboys. Ah. But we also had Riley Cooper. Problem. Miles Austin is your fourth-team wide receiver. You want to know what fourth-team wide receivers have to do? They got to play special teams. So now we're on punt, and Miles Austin, former All-Pro Cowboy, is sitting there on punt. Want to know why our special team struggled? A part of the reason why we went 6-9 that year before Chip Kelly got fired, and then we end up going 1-0 and maybe with Deuce Daly take over as a coach? Because the roster was not balanced. So I hear everybody at the desk if Zeke knows his role, but there's no role that Zeke can occupy unless he's actually going to be a legitimate contributing player, which I don't know that he can be, that is worth the roster imbalance.
What about Deuce Vaughn?
Deuce can't play teams at all because of his size unless he's a returner, but you got Kevontae Turpin. So Deuce is just kind of, he's stuck, Joy. Like, I love Deuce as your third down kind of gadget back if you have a first and second down back. But y'all keep saying, and you all are absolutely right, Zeke is a short yardage and goal line back.
But the other running backs they got, they're not like guys like that. Like, I can't see them telling the coach they don't want to play special teams. They're like, what? Who? Right? I can see Miles feeling like that. He's a future
All pro back then.
All pro, right? But these other guys, who?
Yeah, there's nobody else
on that team.
To me, it's about the fatigue. It's about the fact that, okay, so Zeke should start because he's Zeke. And y'all are right. The vibes, all the things. He should run out there first. Starting at a running back, number 21, Zeke. It'll go crazy. But Shady, you know this. Zeke gonna get the first two snaps. Mm-hmm. But then Dowdle got to carry the load. Or Royce got to carry the load. Right. So after Zeke gets the first two snaps, and then, hey, Zeke. You know, come on out. Then Dowdle plays 3-7. Then punt team alert, punt team alert. And then Dowdle got to be the personal protector. It's just there's so much nuance that we don't really talk about on television as it pertains to roster balance. And acquiring Zeke, you need a starting running back.
Yeah,
who is their starting running back?
I don't like it. I don't like what this looks like right now on this paper. Like, we talk about a lot about on paper this time of year. On paper, this is not an attractive situation, which is why I was confused by them not drafting a running back.
Yes.
I don't dislike the Zeke move because of all the things that you're saying. So Zeke is one of those players that, one, obviously wants to be there and knows the building, knows the nuances, all that thing. I think that matters at a very high level for lots of other reasons other than on the field.
Yeah.
But on the field, who's the running back?
And that's the dilemma. To me, like, even Shady, when you were in KC, you had definitive roles. You tell me all the time. Andy Reid went up to him like, hey, big dog. You know what I'm saying? This is going to be your role on this team. When you went with Bruce Arians in Tampa, hey, get these young guys ready. You knew in your mind you better than some of them cats, but you knew there were roles. I believe that Fournette was the boom. He's going to be the thumper. And then y'all had the dude from USC.
Ronald Jones.
Yeah. And we knew his role was this.
We drafted a kid named Vaughn.
Yes.
Vaughn. Yep.
So there,
listen, man, I knew I don't care where I was going, right? Playing or not playing. I'm not playing special teams. Y'all know that.
So right? Figure it out.
Ain't in the conversation.
Yeah.
Playing up, I'm getting 25. Some things is just know. You know what's going to happen. For them other dudes, they keep, like, they know they're going to play special teams.
Zeke is not, right? Mm-hmm. Zeke has earned that right. Zeke is Zeke. Them other dudes, we don't even know what them dudes are like that. Yeah. No disrespect to
of
them.
Of course.
It's like they haven't earned nothing. Though, so listen, man, y'all need to get ready for special teams. Oh, great first down. Great first down. Get some water and get your butt ready for it.
You crazy?
I love it.
I'm just glad that we get to have a better final shot of Zeke than what we saw in that 49ers game. In the
Yeah, he can redeem himself.
But don't worry about that, though. Let me save it this year. No, playoffs. Hey, playoffs.
They can lose, but they don't have to put my man at center in his final.
Oh, my God.
Well, speaking of losing gracefully, at least the Lakers now have a better chance of doing that. They avoided getting swept, but they're down 3-1. Can LeBron James make history? Andy, has anybody ever come back from down 3-0 before? I don't think anybody
so you don't believe
ever
in the
come
king.
Back.
So you still don't believe in the king?
We'll see.
Say it.
We'll talk
say
about
that.
It. Next
say it.
On Speed. Can LeBron make history? The Lakers avoided being swept. Family, this is the best sports topic of the day. LeBron James, he got a dub, thankfully. LeBron James said after the win, quote, "We're giving ourselves another lifeline." Keep in mind, no team in NBA history has ever come back from a 2-0 deficit. Shady, going to you first on this one, because I'm really eager to hear what the heck you got to say. Do you believe LeBron can make a historical comeback?
Do you believe in the king?
I do.
I believe in the king. And he had something like this before, and he overcame it, didn't he?
Something like it. It was like.
Listen, I don't think most teams can come back from 3-1. If there's one person out there, Joey Taylor. Mm-hmm. Slick, if there's one person out there that can do it, it's the king. I think the way that they've been playing defense.
Wait, hold on. Slick, why are you looking at my dog like this, Slick? That's real disrespectful how you looked at my dog, Shady McCoy.
Hey, okay, Slick.
First of all,
good,
the
bro.
Bling over there
is
next
shining.
Level. Between the studs
Shady is
and the
shining.
Watch.
You know, Shady is shining.
You know, God is good.
All the time, you know what I mean?
It's not shady today. It's shining.
So wait, they don't got a shine.
Bars today.
What? You're blinding right now. I'm telling you, it's like looking into the Milky Way. I'm telling you, man. It's nice. It's
I
nice.
Love Slick, man. He make me feel good about myself, Slick.
But how do you feel about LeBron's chances?
I'm being serious, though. If anybody can do it, it can be LeBron. And if you look at the games, right, low-key, they should have won game one, and they damn should have won game two.
Sure.
They should have won that. Yeah. Playing solid defense, AD doing what he had to do. Now, if we get a little more AD in the fourth quarter, it'll be a different story. D-Lo, I mean, he's been up and down, but for the most part, in this series, he's been more up than down. So I think if they get the same type of performance from D-Lo, they get Andy Davis, the same type of performance from that on defense and offense, both sides of the ball. In the fourth quarter, you give me a little bit more, and you let the rest in the Kings' hands, it can get done. That's all I'm saying. I won't pick now one other team out there to get this done other than LeBron James. But you know why?
Wow.
Because he's done something like this before.
How long ago was that?
Yeah, years ago.
Years ago.
About eight of them.
Mr. repeats itself.
8 years ago. That's a lifetime when it comes to the NBA. And I do not mean this as any shade toward LeBron at all.
Then why are you wearing glasses?
Because of shade. That's shade.
That was nice.
Swing so dramatic. Swing so dramatic today.
I am. The Nuggets have played in spurts in this series to win three games. Because they're looking at it saying, we're trying to win 16. We're trying to win another championship. So how much energy do we have to expend on this team in the first round? We're going to measure it. We're only going to expend as much. We beat them 8 times. No, we beat them 9 times. No, we beat them 10 times. We're not even playing at our best. And then they fooled around a little too much in this last game. And as a result, they gave one up. They are not going to do that in Denver. Not tonight. It's going to be altitude and attitude. And I don't care whether Jamal Murray plays or not. The Denver Nuggets know, okay, we need to take them just a little more seriously than we have to this point. But the Denver Nuggets have determined exactly how this has gone. The Lakers are doing everything they can. LeBron James at 39 is doing everything that he can. The Lakers cannot get to a level higher than they showed you in game four. The Denver Nuggets have only shown you the level they can get to for stretches during this series, and it has been good enough to go 3-1. So They just need to take it up another notch, and this thing is over.
Hopefully, Joy and I take it up another notch on the other side of the commercial break. Do we believe that LeBron James can make this historical comeback? It will be the most fascinating thing that you and I talk about and watch tonight. 3 minutes. You'll hear our takes. That's next on Speed.
I believe.
A historical comeback is what's necessary, Joy. The Lakers were down 3-0. Now it's 3-1. They play again here in about 3 hours. Do you believe LeBron can make a historical comeback in this series?
I think LeBron can. I don't know if the Lakers can. Me hedging my bets. This is a lot to ask. I do think that it's... You think that the Nuggets have been playing with their food, though, so to speak?
Yes.
The entire series.
And you know... And
I don't know.
This championship team, you sure this championship
team? I'm going to keep it quick, because obviously we ain't got a ton of time. I would say, and I think, Slick, you said this, but I'll say it like this. The reason the Lakers should have won is the exact reason they've lost. Because everybody thinks, well, the Lakers been ahead. They've been ahead. They should have won. Yeah, that's why they lost, because they gassed, because they're sprinting the whole freaking time. And the Nuggets are like, oh, we ain't got to sprint. And, Joy, you know this best. I love using track and field analogies. I can beat an 800 runner in the first 200 meters. And y'all going to be looking at the race talking about, man, Acho, you should have won. If you would have just kept that up, boy, you almost had her. You almost had her in them first 200. Well, duh, because she was pacing herself. She was more intelligent than I was. So the reason the Lakers should have won is the same reason they lost. Y'all know better than this. Lakers not winning this series, man. Usain Bolt was never winning major competitions through 50 meters, and he always won. Yeah. Don't get it twisted. Travis Kelce, well, he always wins. God, dog, he wins on the field. Yeah. He wins off the field. He definitely smiles when he goes to the bank. He is now the highest paid tight end. Well, that's what it is. He's now the highest paid tight end once again. That's a very wealthy smile if I've ever seen one. Travis Kelce secured the bag. Let's talk about it. Next on Speed. Huge city in Kansas City. Chiefs fans, after another good draft, you got even better news. Travis Kelce, he just got a raise, actually. Patrick Mahomes said, I told y'all I'll never let him leave. Congrats to my guy, T. Kelce. Shady, Brett Veach and Andy Reid, they know how to take care of them now.
They treat the people right. That's why they got this good luck. And they win these championships because they treat their guys right. Patrick Mahomes, Travis Kelce, you got Chris Jones. What's all about, man? Listen, Chiefs Kingdom, keep doing what y'all doing, man. Andy Reid treat people with respect. I love them. That's why we all love playing for them. Brett Veach, same thing.
When was the last time somebody, they just added money to a guy's contract? Like, that doesn't happen.
Without adding years, that's wild. So they didn't add, it wasn't an extension. He just got a raise. Yeah. Like, it just, hey, well done.
You know what? We like you.
Got the Swiftie. Take a little more. Man, he went everywhere.
Crazy. That's like, you know what I love, though? He'll get to play one place the entirety of his career.
Yeah.
And he'll be, like, one of the greatest ever doing it. Because even when you think about the all-time great tight ends, for the most part, most of them
move. They all move on, yeah.
They all move. Some plays this place, some play Broncos, some with Ravens, some with Chiefs.
I mean, they just simply don't win without him.
At all.
As a Bengals fan, I can't wait to see Patrick Mahomes without Travis Kelce.
Just throwing that out there. Yeah. Well, we're glad y'all spent the entire show with us. You could have been watching anybody, and you spent 90 minutes with your family. We don't take it for granted. We'll be here all week, and we will see y'all tomorrow. Peace.